Back from the weekend, another jam-packed show today.
Yes, Donald Trump, we spoke to him, and also there was some interesting, Robin, you had some statistics about the rise of women going to prison. We spoke to some interesting people who'd done some time.
Had a good chat to Dan Merritt. He could destroy 3 or 4 football teams this year with his coaching.
He's amazing.
And also we launched at Best of Brisbane. We're going for the Best Fish and Chip Shop, which you can still vote for.
And how dare you? You waltz in here 4 weeks in, bring your own fish and chip shop. We've got to get voting for Charlie's Chips. It's the best in Brisbane.
Free food out of this.
Yeah, well, we've got 9 other options as well. So if that's not your taste, then there's 9 up there for you. TripleM.com.au. We will have a winner by Friday. But until then, enjoy the catch-up.
This Marto Ed and Robin catch-up is brought to you by the unbreakable Toyota Hilux SR5 with satellite navigation and 3.5-tonne towing and trailer sway control. Search Toyota Value.
Best. Marto, Ed and Robin's Best of Brisbane.
Yes, it is back. And it is back with a vengeance, Marto. We had so much fun in our former incarnation about finding your favourites around Brisbane. We did Chinese restaurant, we did coffee, we did butchers, and then we actually, when Robin joined us, we took her out.
Meet a few of them.
Yeah, we met the Best of Brisbane, the coffee van, which is just going from strength to strength, and then we went to our Best of Brisbane, our butchers.
The Cabana. If I could recommend one thing, and that's the thing, you find out about these businesses. I'd never even been to Banyo Meats before, and now I recognise it as the greatest cabana
it really
in Brisbane.
Is.
I will travel
I'm
to go
with
there.
You.
And that's what this is all about. It's about finding treasures, because you can't be one person or a couple of people can't go to every shop and judge this. We're getting everyone's input.
Yes, we are. And Robin, we now turn it over to you because you have suggested the next topic and we are more than happy to go with it.
Best Fish and Chip Shop. And the reason why I wanted to suggest this is that my 12-year-old came back from 5 days at school camp and all he wanted was Charlie's Chips.
Okay, so you've said something there. So this is your own personal nomination. Mm. So give it the full name and title. It is?
Okay, it's Kenmore Plaza Seafood. But because Charlie is the owner, it is affectionately known in the western suburbs as Charlie's Chips. And in fact, I can Google Charlie's Chips and Kenmore Plaza Seafood will come
up. Oh, really?
Yeah, I've done that many times. And I've got Charlie on the phone. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Robin, how are you?
Yeah, good. Now, tell these guys and everyone listening why you are so good.
Ooh, now that's okay. well, it's family-run business.
Yeah, it's a good start.
So my parents still come to the shop every day.
They love it.
My sisters both work with me.
Oh, yeah.
We source the best product in Australia.
Where do you get your fish from?
My fish, majority comes from Queensland, mate.
Nice one.
And they do added little things, like they do seafood salads. So if you want to, you know, if you're feeling a bit like you don't want the battered
salad?
Stuff. Go, Charlie.
Oh, mate, we got prawns in there, avocado. It's a beautiful salad, mate. We do Caesar salads. We do a Greek salad. Mm. We also do good burgers.
There we go. Now you're being interesting. So it's
Listen, if Gordo comes down and likes our burgers, mate, I think everyone will.
Mate, have you seen what else
Talis.
Is?
Pick that name off
Gordon
the floor.
That's right.
Has he signed anything?
No.
He doesn't like paying for things either.
No, he doesn't.
No. Okay, let's steer away from that.
All right, you are officially in the running, Charlie. Charlie, tell us where, in your own words, where is the business?
We're at Kenmore Plaza, which is 841 Moggle Road.
Signature dish, what is your number one?
Oh, mate, I think the salmon is probably the most popular of the fish. We do a lot of dinners too, because we get a little seating area outside.
I like this.
So people come in, and under $20, you're going to have fish, chips, and salad, mate. BYO, and we don't charge for corkage either.
Righto. Yeah. So you are now in the running. We'll make you the first nomination of Brisbane's Best of Fish and Chip Shops in Brisbane. Make sure you tell your all your customers and clients to vote, Charlie, because that's how it gets decided who's the best.
Fair enough, mate.
All right, Charlie.
See, told you. And his mum makes the baklava. And that sits on the counter as well, and that's really yummy.
Well, there's 10 spots, and one has already been taken by Kenmore Plaza Seafood, so you got to hurry. Get your calls in. 1-333-53 is the number. We are looking for Brisbane's Best Fish and Chips. If you know it, get it nominated. Marto, Ed and Robin, it is the new Triple M.
Tammy from Forest Lake, what's your nomination?
My nomination is 2 fish at Forest Lake.
Why do you ask? what's the story? Why so good?
Oh, they just do amazing food. Their produce is always really nice and fresh. It's relatively, you know, we can feed a family of five for around $30 and there's always leftovers.
Ooh,
and their grilled
good.
Barramundi with lemon pepper is just
that's what
denied.
I wanted. Okay.
There you go. Grilled barramundi.
Jeez, they Tammy, serve it in paper or in boxes?
They will if you want them to, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, jeez, that's this good. Is
$30 for a family of five with leftovers. You got to think value's got to be part of this, guys.
That's excellent.
You know what I mean? Value has to be part of the criteria. That sounds pretty good to me.
Jack of North Lakes, where is the best fish and chip shop for you?
Yeah, Yabby Road out of Redcliffe.
Okay, it's got a pun in the title, which I approve of. And what's there? What are they good at, Jack?
Oh, mate, just like the lady before, fresh produce. But you can pick up, you know, you go to the fish and chip shop, you sometimes feel like the fish is a bit flat when it gets crumbed.
Yeah.
Mate, theirs is nice and thick. You know it's a real piece of fish.
Oh, my goodness.
Jack, I see you live at North Lake, so you're prepared to drive down Anzac Ave all the way to Redcliffe, or is it, which end is it at, Scarborough or Woody Point end of Redcliffe?
Nah, the Scarborough end.
Right,
but, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Like, it might be a 20-minute drive, but
they never fail.
Righto. That's a show. Are you also batter or just crumbed?
Nah, crumbed, but they offer battered and they do grilled.
Wow. Yeah. Righto. And hang on, just we'll ask Jack,
Portion size,
mate. $40 the whole family, you still got leftovers, definitely.
Righto.
That's good.
Hey, that's two people I can see have nominated them. They've got to be in. Yabby Road.
Okay.
And David.
Daniel.
Oh, Daniel.
Daniel.
Sorry.
Hi.
Where's your best fish and chips?
Big Jim's, Holland Road at Holland Park, right next door to the Cavs school.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be doing very well, I reckon, after
Yeah,
after
what's
three.
Big Jim?
Feeds all the local school kids. It's just a dream feed there every time. Every time it's the best taste. Fish, fresh fish, calamari.
How's their potato cakes?
Potato cakes? I have not actually eaten them yet, as yet.
Calamari's a good one, Daniel.
Calamari's the go.
Righto.
We're all just sitting here salivating.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking about that. I was just thinking about
rubbing my hands together.
Going yum.
Doesn't matter if there's a winner here. We all seem to be little winners. Yep. Who's that? Is it Stu? I'm having so much trouble with that, Ronnie.
Stu of Marsden.
Where is it, mate?
Yeah, guys, it's got to be Fishman's Daughter.
Ooh, where's that?
139, I think, Browns Plains Road.
What do they do well, mate?
Mate, their chips are to die for, soft, got a crunchy outside. They're batter. I'm a batter man, and you can't get better than what these guys serve up.
Right, when do you have them, lunch, or is it for family dinners?
Oh, family dinners.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Can I ask, Robin mentioned something before, guys, about potato cakes. Do you call them potato scallops or cakes, Stu?
Scallops.
Yeah, well done, mate. Good stuff.
Okay, thank you, Stu.
Okay, I'm clearly wrong. I'll take that one. On Facebook, on Triple M Facebook, a lot of people are going for Clayfield Seafood Market.
Oh, yes.
Brenda's gone there too. Yes. Like a lot of people are saying Clayfield Seafood Markets. Where are they, Brenda?
Just near, I'll get the address.
Near the bowling alley?
Yeah. No.
No? Okay. Hey, listen, Fish on Flinders, can I throw that one in? Ed and I will be there. Hold on, who have we got there? Is that Catherine?
Hi.
Having a chat.
Yeah.
Fishers in Tenerife.
Where's Fishers? Give me a street.
It's the street, just that main drive there on the river.
Not a gasworks there.
Yeah,
not a gasworks. Oh, no.
There's one in there.
Further down from gasworks.
Right.
A family feed for under $50, and it feeds three adults and two children. They put in 12 calamari. They put in 13. They're just the great. They do the best grilled fish. Generous pieces.
All right.
Worth trying.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, that Fishers at Tenerife. Catherine. Thank you. That's in. I love this family. The family feast option, I'm really enjoying. I'm really enjoying hearing about what you can get.
I like it when people, like, where was Catherine from? She's from Nunda, and she'll go to Tenerife to get her fish and chips. That's one of the great signs.
If it's good.
If you're driving.
And you want the extra potato scallop or the extra calamari.
Thank you about the scallops.
Yeah, okay, look, I got it in. I'm all good. John, Brophy Island, where's the best fish and chips?
Hi, guys. Have to be Savage's Seafood at Brophy Island.
Oh, the Savages, they actually catch their own fish. I know they go to Morton and catch fish.
Absolutely, mate. Local products, family owned business. Yeah, absolutely. Do anything you like.
Haven't they got trawlers as well? They'll bring in their own prawns and stuff.
Absolutely, mate. Prawns, crabs, then the fish as well. Great spot, mate. Good value for money.
I'm sure everyone at Bribie knows where they are. You go over the bridge, how do you get to them?
You hang it right down near the jetty, near the main jetty. They're in Bongaree. They're on third in Bongaree.
Righto.
Okay, we've got it sorted.
Do you call them potato scallops or potato cakes?
Scallops, mate.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm a lone wolf out there on my own. But, Brendo, I just Googled for you. The new Clayfield Seafood Market is Sandgate Road.
Yes, it is, right next to the Cold Rock and Subway.
Sandgate Road's fairly long road.
I spent a lot of time there.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Those are your nominations, triplem.com.au. They will be up after the show. You can vote. Of course, you're leading the witness with Robin.
It's Charlie's Chips, otherwise known as Kenmore Plaza Seafood.
There we go. That's Robin's one, but Triple
M.com.au.
Marto, Ed and Robin, the new Triple M.
It is my high honour and distinct privilege to introduce to you the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
Still talking to us, and thank you very much for your time, Mr. Trump. Yeah. Well, you went to a rally yesterday in Florida. I was really pumped up. It was like pre-election. You know it's all over, don't you?
Yes, the election's over and I won. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. Remember when I won?
Yes.
Have you seen that loser Hillary anywhere? Well, have you? Because I haven't. Yeah. I thought I saw her in the White House the other day, but it was just a grey beanbag. Just a tired old saggy grey beanbag that nobody wants to sit in.
Now, at the rally yesterday, you said there was a terrorist attack in Sweden.
Yes, terror again in Sweden. A terrible attack.
Mr. Trump, it never happened. You made that up. Sweden is a very safe country.
Never mind that. Don't kid yourself. Sweden is a nightmare. It's so dangerous. Everyone over there is armed with an Allen key. You go into a sauna, and I'm going to tell you something. What? You go into a sauna in Sweden, you're going to see some sausage. I can assure you, it is absolutely hell over there.
Also said that the media is evil.
It is. The media is the most evil thing in the whole world. Yes. The evil, evil, evil media. The media is responsible for the most disgusting things in the whole world. My Kitchen Rules, Married at First Sight, Zipporah, Waleed, John O'Coleman, The Compare the Market, Meerkat, Barbecue Bob, Big Bang Theory.
Okay, that's really offensive.
Someone's going to get hurt.
Ed Robbins, the new Triple M.
Now, there were some very interesting statistics in the Sunday Mail yesterday, but they were a really small article. And basically it was, and they were using South Australia as an example, but apparently it's for Australia-wide as well. The amount of women falling foul of the law is growing at twice the rate of males. Mm. Now, it's all due to drug offences.
Good improvement. Well done, girls.
Yeah, look at us go.
Well done.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics' latest figures show the rate of female offenders increased by 8% between 2015 and 16, compared to 4% of the growth in males. But, how's this? Since 2008, the number of female offenders has grown by 43%. From 7,748 to 11,089.
What offences? Usually women aren't in there for violent offences, are they?
Well, no, drugs.
Oh, right.
Drugs.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
But it made me think a couple of weeks ago, Luke Bonner, who's the guy overnight, was talking.
He's doing a great job, that guy. We've got Talkback Radio, you describe it as, wouldn't you? From about 12 until... What time does he finish up in the morning?
4:30. Yeah,
12 to 4:30.
I love overnight talkback radio.
He does some great things.
Because he gets really interesting people. And a couple of weeks ago, he got a guy that had worked in the prison system.
Let's go women's jails.
You know, I'll be honest, 15 years maximum security men's jails can handle that. I'm too scared to work at a women's jail. Mate, do you want me to tell you something, honestly?
Yeah.
Men, you can tell when the temper's going up, right?
Yeah.
Done all the courses, and I mean, they're called the anger volcano. And so you can go, like a normal person gets angry, right?
Yeah.
And I can tell you all the different steps. You know, you feel different things and, you know, they go through the steps, 1 to 10, right? So a normal person kind of goes 1. If someone really annoys you, they can go 1, 3, 5, 7. In the women's jail, mate, they go 1, 5, attack.
Are you surprised? I was surprised at that.
I never thought of it.
No. They're more unpredictable, is he? He's sort of saying that too.
Well, I think that's what he's saying. I guess the only way to really find out is to talk to people who've actually been inside.
We want to talk to people that had been on the inside. Thankfully, I haven't had to go to my own phone contact list. And
not yet.
Matt.
Not yet.
Yeah, mate.
How are you, mate? What happened?
Look, I got caught up in some an activity in 2012 when I was a kid, and I spent two years on bail and ended up serving 11 months for it.
Well, everyone finds it interesting, mate. What was it like in there, like that first day when they did the search and the door closed?
Well, it's definitely different. You're taken into a room, you strip down, you do all the, you know, the search checks and everything. So that's definitely something different you don't experience in everyday life outside. But walking into the first unit, you're looking around. There's a lot of people there. You just don't know, you know, who these people are, if they're high-profile people or they're just kids in there for lesser crimes than what you are. So it's all a new experience walking in there.
And how did you get through it, Matt? What was your strategy?
I kept my head down. I studied in there. You can actually do a lot of study, like, in different areas. I decided to do my year 11 and 12 in there.
Good option.
Okay. So, yeah, I did that. I kept my head down. I didn't open my mouth. It's just more tending. It's a lot of politics in there as well. You know, if you go walking around talking about other people or... it just doesn't... You just can't do that in there.
Yeah. How did you make time go faster than it would have? How did you allay the boredom?
You can't make time go faster in there. Every day feels like 3 days.
Oh,
is it enough to make you never want to go back? Like, have you changed your life?
Definitely, definitely. And the worst thing about my sentence was I wasn't... my release date was changed, so I ended up serving an extra 2 months.
Oh, yuck!
And when you're waiting that day to come out, and then you're told an extra 2 months, you know, it hits you. It's a traumatic experience. But the first day out, like when you build up to coming out, my time wasn't that long. Like, you know, it was only a backpacker's lag, what they call them there.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
That means you're only there for a short term.
Ah, oh, righto. Gotcha. Oh, nice one. But how was it that first day?
Oh, it's all a rush. Your adrenaline's pumping. It flies by so quickly. Like, you've got people calling you. You know, it's crazy. It honestly flew so quickly. And yeah, it was definitely the weirdest feeling you'll ever feel.
Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for your story today, buddy. Fred from Ipswich. G'day, Fred. Mate, so how long were you in for?
I was in for 6 months, man.
Okay. And yes. And how did you find it?
I found it was actually quite boring. I mean, it was more about social isolation and deprivation than anything constructive. I suppose it was more punitive than rehabilitative.
Right, you do hear that. You do hear that it's just people sort of festering away.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, for time, and then they get back out. But we just heard from Matt that he used the time to, you know, to study.
Yeah, I listened to that, and I suppose it depends on how long you were in there for. Because I was only in there for 6 months, I didn't actually qualify for any programs. So as far as rehabilitation goes, I think it's... depends on the length of time that you're actually serving as to what you actually qualify for.
It's quite ironic, isn't it?
If you go in there for 6 months or less, you don't qualify for anything.
Was it enough to motivate you, though, not to re-offend?
I would say not. It's more like, I found it to be more like a holiday club, quite honestly. And like I said, I mean, once you get out of the units into residential, you've got tennis courts and you can pretty much got free rein apart from 10 a.m. till about 6 p.m.
We should put Nick Kyrgios in there. He might train properly. Hey, were you scared at any stage?
Pardon?
Were you scared for yourself? Did you run into any dangerous characters?
I ran into a few people who'd done some serious crimes. But no, I was never scared because you're not judged. When you get in there, you're not judged for what you go in there for. You're judged on how you act when you're in there.
Okay.
So as long as... like the other guy said, as long as you keep your head down, mind your own business and don't get involved in anyone else's affairs, you're never going to have any problems.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate that. Jay from Helensvale. Good day, Jay. Now, how long were you in there for, mate?
I did a backpacker's stint as well, what they call it, so I did 6 months.
Yeah.
For me, jail was a blessing in disguise, absolutely. I was in there because I was an ice addict, and through that addiction, I got involved. Well, I committed a crime, a violent crime, and, got put... I did 6 months up in Arthur Gorey there.
Geez, how hard was that to get off ice and be in a jail?
Oh, like I said, mate, it was a blessing in disguise. So it was really... when I got arrested for the crime, it was just, I had an epiphany. It was 2 days before my daughter's 12th birthday. Yeah. And I just realised how low I'd got in my life. So really, for me, it was like, it was an awakening. I could have used when I went in there, because like an ounce of gear came in within the first 6 weeks of me being in there. So I could have used, but I was just too dead set on sorting my life out. And I just said to myself, if ever I get the chance on the outside, because I had no idea how long I'd be in there for, because it was a serious crime, but I was blessed to get bail, district court bail, after 6 months. And I just made a commitment to change my life. I've got out of jail, and I'm now a presenter for the Australian Anti-ICE Campaign, working with kids, doing community forums.
Good on you, Jay.
I'm the director of a documentary filmed on the Gold Coast called Meth Effects, the movie. And I just got a real passion to help people involved with ICE and raise awareness on that subject, because we're losing so many good people to the drug. And I heard before you mentioned the rate of females has gone up dramatically. Yeah. I really feel all that the rate of crime and everything is because of ICE use, and we need to do something about it big time. So
Hey, Jay.
Well done,
thanks,
Jay.
Good passion,
thanks for,
man.
Thanks for your story today. Robin, you've introduced us to some stats to saying that the amount of women that are being incarcerated is on the rise, and we've been speaking to people that have done some time. Now, we've only been able to speak to men so far, but we've got someone here who has experience in both a men's and women's prison. Loretta, hello.
Hello.
Now, why have you got experience in both a men's and women's prison?
Well, I met my father for the very first time in a prison over in WA.
Oh, wow.
He was inside.
He was inside after 19 years of not knowing who he was. That's how I met him.
Oh, good Lord.
And that was fun. That was 6 weeks of trying to get to know a man that I've never met or heard of for 19 years.
So you were 19 years old, or he'd been in there for 19 years?
No. I was 19 years old. He was in there for 12 years.
So serious crime then.
Yes. He was a driver, and he was like a getaway driver kind of thing, in a home invasion.
Oh, no. Wow. Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's one experience then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a cousin of mine who I met through my dad's side of the family, she was serving time for attempted murder.
Oh, God.
And she was in a women's prison over there in WA, and it's just totally different. Like, the men are just more worried about, you know, keeping themselves, or that you have your, you know, the ego outbursts of who's bigger than who. But in the women's one, you've really got to watch your back, because, you know, I've seen on several occasions while I was there, if one girl, she didn't like how this other girl had her hair in the visiting area, she just walked up and just thumped them.
Jeez.
There would be
much more violent.
It was just, it was full on violent. Like, if they didn't like the way you looked at them, or the way you spoke, the way you were, you know, dressed, it was all high intense every single time that I was in there.
That's what that guy said, volcano anger, it just boils over really quickly.
It was just, you had to be like, you were a visitor and you were on high alert the whole time.
When you're
When you're a visitor, and they warned you when you came into the prison, do not have eye-to-eye contact with any other inmates except for the one that you're visiting. And they gave you a list of what you can, you know, what you should say, what you shouldn't say to when you went in there, because this is how things started, you know. It's a totally different eye experience, you know, eye opener.
This is how this conversation started. The prison guard saying, I can work in a men's prison, but I could never work in a women's prison. It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
You're confirming it.
Well, it's the red effect.
Yeah, it was just, it's a big eye-opener, and thank Christ I only went 3 times, and that was it. That was enough. I couldn't do it anymore.
That's enough of that. Thank you,
know,
Loretta.
That may actually be why Pauline Hanson chose to make friends with one of the most notorious serial killers while she was inside.
Gee, I don't remember that story.
Pauline Hanson?
Yeah, she went to jail.
I remember that, but she made friends with her.
Yeah, she made friends. I want to say Val May.
Wow.
I will check
Val May
that
back.
Yes. I'm pretty sure. But maybe that explains that you've got to kind of associate yourself with someone who can protect you. Look, I'm just speculating. I have absolutely no idea.
It might explain her infatuation with Trump as well. She's got a type.
We've got to get out of here. Marto, Ed and Robin, it is the new Triple M. You can start voting for Brisbane's best fish and chips. Do it. TripleM.com.au. The winner announced Friday. We'll catch you tomorrow from 5:30.
The news came through, started coming through yesterday morning from various means and people messaging me, and then you found out the story of Dan Vickerman. Now, if anyone doesn't know, he was a 6'8" wallaby player, played 63 tests for Australia. He was a really gutsy, courageous guy at all times on the field and a humble giant off the field. How does that sound? A complete gentleman.
Nice fella.
Really intelligent. But tough as nails. To tell you his story, he was born, late 70s? He would have been born 79. But when he was 19, he was in the South African under-21 team. Okay. All right? He didn't want to stay in South Africa. Here's where the courage comes in. He decided he wanted to move to Australia because he went, opportunities are limited in Africa. I'm going to go to Australia. Moved over here on his own. Got a contract down in Canberra with the Brumbies. And within a year, he was playing for the Wallabies.
Wow.
He was an enormous man, and he was tough. He was hard, tough, fit, skillful. They reckon he worked so hard because he wasn't really skillful, but he taught himself to be extremely skillful. You ever seen how complicated the rugby line-out is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was the man. He was a master of that, calling all the manoeuvres and the moves to pull off of that. When he was about 27, I reckon, when you're at the peak of your earning powers, he said, I want a little bit more in life. He went to Cambridge University, right? Gave up the money. You know, the 500, 600, whatever it was for a year, went to Cambridge University and did a degree in land economy. But then he wasn't finished. You know, 3 years later. So he might have been 28 when that happened. So then he came back to Australia and played for the Wallabies again at the age of 31, 32. Then had a terrible stress fracture in his leg, and at 32 had to give it away. Two children. He had his degree. He just got a new job 4 weeks ago, this wonderful job. He was tied up closely with
Job.
He
just got a new job.
I don't know. There's too much of this going on, I don't understand. Like, this guy, everything to live for, it would seem. Mm. Why do you suddenly... And Robin, I don't want to drag the show down, but you've been through this, and I just, it's happening too much. Bloke's just giving up.
Yeah, and I mean, the suicide rate in Australia, I think, is one of the worst in the world. And the age groups are 18 to 24-year-old men and then over 40, so he would have been just coming into that second bit. Of course, for those that don't know, the reason why I know so much about this is that my husband suicided 2.5 years ago.
Wow. Mm.
So the three things that I would say, because I get asked this often and I get asked from people like the Black Dog Institute and those sort of official places
You've
as well.
You've got the learnings, and your learnings might help others.
So here's my three points. My first is shame. Australian men, and I think a lot of men around the world, but I think particularly Australian men, there's this whole thing about being ashamed.
Of what?
Not different succeeding at what you, your expectation of yourself. It's not that the shame that people put on you, it's the shame that you feel within yourself. And I would say that that's the great fear with Grant Hackett, is that he's embarrassed and feeling shame.
Hopefully he's all right.
The second thing, I think, are moments. There's this wonderful author who wrote books about raising boys called Celia Lashley, and she talks about that boys and men have moments, and in those moments they can do really stupid things like drink drive, take drugs, jump off a bridge because they think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And in a moment, someone can think that suicide is the answer. And she says that what you have to do with your young boys and also our men is talk about there will be more better moments. So in this moment, it feels terrible. But in the future, you will have better moments. And the third thing I'd say from my own personal experience with three sons left behind, consequences.
What do you mean consequences?
If a guy and or girl who is going to or thinking about suicides actually thinks through the impact it will have on a family member, they wouldn't do it. I have
don't.
To believe
They're
that
just seeing themselves.
That's right. But I have to believe that if my husband Tony could have seen how much it has devastated his family, he wouldn't have done it. And maybe that's the other way around it for family members to go, you know what, I need to tell you how much I would, you know, shrivel up. Yeah. If you did this.
Listen, with this Dan Vickerman, I see in one report he contacted somebody late on Saturday night. What does that mean?
Usually, from my experience, that means that they don't actually want to succeed. it's a cry for help.
They want someone to save.
The people who actually go through it are the ones that you least expect. Mm-hmm. They've planned it out and they make sure that no one will find them and that they can actually succeed at it.
Righto.
Well, thank you, Robin. And thank you, great explanation. If you think you need help or you know someone that needs help, Lifeline is there for you. 1-3-11-4
Reach out, people. It could change someone's life. Okay, it's page three of today's paper. It was across all the news over the last couple of days. It's about the guy who got bitten by a shark.
Multiple shark bites left Glenn bleeding heavily at Eva Reef. He jumped one way from a rock, two friends the other. Within seconds, they heard him scream.
I hadn't heard that bit, so as soon as he jumped in, he's got nailed.
Yeah, he's got nailed, but thank God he had mates around him because they saved his life.
Glenn's friends hauled him from the water. A tourniquet was applied within minutes of the attack as the boat raced to Port Hinchinbrook. Paramedics believe another 60 seconds would have cost Glenn his life.
60 seconds, and it was quite a long journey as well, wasn't it, from where they got the attack took place to where the rescue helicopter picked them up, wasn't it? It was quite a lengthy boat journey, so the swift acting of his mates was quite incredible.
Did I hear there was a US Navy guy that was with him?
Yes.
A US Navy guy who they do extraordinary medical training.
And thank God for a guy like that, but, I mean, I guess what I'm curious about is the general public, because at
times... What would you have done?
I think I would have known to. I mean, you'd want to stop the bleeding.
Just
you would
jam,
have to stop
towel
the,
or whatever into
well,
the bleeding.
Well, don't they say ice?
Ice if you got it, but Jesus,
if you
a lot
don't
of people
have
don't.
Ice, yeah. But if you're fishing, you might. But
pressure.
That's the point, though. Like, if you're in a normal everyday situation and something happens, oof. You know, have you ever had to be in that situation?
Oh, I haven't, but I've like 1-3-5-3 if anybody has. I've never had to do anything.
First arrivals on crash scenes as well. There's things, pressure is always a big one, and mm-hmm. that's with the ice as well.
But also, like, you've said that you've done stuff where pulling people out of rips, for example.
Yeah, but they were both
conscious,
those two.
Do you know what to do? I mean, you knew about CPR.
See, even owning a swimming pool, well, you're building a swimming pool.
Yeah.
When that gets built, you have to have a CPR how-to on your wall.
No. I know CPR, I reckon I'd be all right.
You'd be right.
But I don't know about going into the water when there's a rip as to how to get someone to pull them out without being caught up in the rip.
And that happens a lot because people get taken out. You swim too hard in a rip. You use all your energy trying to get out of it when you should just let yourself go out the back and then swim in.
Oh.
See? We didn't know that, Ed.
Well, wasn't that a purpose? I've been saved from two rips in my life and that's probably why.
Just let
when
yourself
I was a
go.
Kid. Yeah, when I was a kid in the goalie. All right.
Have we got anyone?
Yeah, Mal from Ipswich. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah, mate. Have you ever... How do you go about it? You've saved anyone before?
I'm more in a more professional capacity of paramedic by trade. And,
oh, righto.
Yeah,
oh,
and now and now I teach first aid and CPR.
Oh God, you're an expert. What would you do if you came on a shark attack? Some bloke's been bitten in his femur.
Well, for me, I wouldn't because I don't go in the ocean. There's too many nasty things out there. but yes, but what they've actually did was obviously get as much pressure on there as you possibly can, and the use of a tourniquet in the last ditch situation when you can't stop the bleeding, then a tourniquet is the last thing that you've got. So.
Sorry, I'm going to jump in, Mal, because I've heard the word tourniquet a few times, and I think I vaguely know what it is, but. It's like a strap or something around the wound? Where do I put a tourniquet?
Effectively, well, if it's on, say, it's on the leg, on the femur, you want to get the tourniquet on. And a tourniquet could be like your belt, preferably something decently wide, at least 5 centimetres wide. Right. But in this case, I'm not really sure what they used. They could have used tubing of some sort to
like a leg
get
rope
pressure.
Yeah.
Yep. Possibly a leg rope. To get pressure upon that area. And basically, effectively, you're cutting off the circulation to that lower area.
And ice would be important, would it, Matt?
Some ice would be important in that situation. It may not have made much of a difference, to be brutally honest. But ice is important to slow down circulation if need be.
Mal, was there a new approach to snake bites? Remember that used to be a tourniquet and used to be suck some of the poison out. That's nonsense, isn't it?
Yes, that is nonsense. I blame Hollywood for that sort of stuff.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. We have never ever taught cut and suck technique. That's all Hollywood stuff. Yeah. It's all basically applying one compression bandage over the site and then starting at the fingertips or at the toes, and then moving your way up to the armpit or up to the groin to slow the path of the venom.
As a paramedic, and I've got a friend who's a paramedic, she told me that she was somewhat disheartened by the amount of call-outs that she goes to where no one in the vicinity knows any CPR or first aid. Do you think that more people need to know first aid?
Oh, definitely. I'm on my way now to actually teach a first aid class. Right. And the more people who know first aid, the better it is. As a paramedic, I love it when I turn up on scene and first aid has been performed, because it makes, you know, my job as a paramedic so much easier. But it's just really good to know. The philosophy I always try to teach people is, think that you are looking after your loved one. This is your child, your partner, your parents that you love, that you are going to be treating. And so you want to learn something to make sure that you help them as much as you can.
Can you give us your best piece of advice for CPR now that it's changed slightly?
Yeah, the best thing about the change with CPR is 30 compressions to two rescue breaths.
Yes.
So there was a mention of 30 seconds on and then two breaths. So it's changed to 30 compressions to two rescue breaths. And it's basically, you know, for an adult, two hands in the center of the chest and compressing a good depth, allowing the chest to recoil. But just keep your pace. If you don't want to put your mouth on someone else's mouth, you can just do compression-only CPR for adults. And, you know, if you can't remember how to count to 100 or so, just listen, just put the song Staying Alive in your head.
Oh, they still use that,
yeah.
Right, eh?
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah.
And Alive?
Remember, yeah, there was an episode of The Office once where they were using that.
Yeah. Wow. Great knowledge there, Mel. Thanks for that. Of course, the question is, when have you saved a life? We've got some incredible calls coming through.
Rachel of Caboolture, what happened?
My cousin and I were both pulled out into a rip. I was a much stronger swimmer than him. I ended up having to tread water, holding him up at the same time for a good 5 minutes before they were able to get out to us. And then they pulled him up in the boat and made me swim back.
Swim back?
Isn't that a pain? Was he trying to... What happens when you save somebody? They're always trying to grab hold of you and they're dragging you down.
Oh, no.
That's a big moment, Rachel.
Yeah. He was very young at the time and he was holding onto a bodyboard which slipped away.
Oh, okay.
And luckily I was fairly strong swimmer back then, so I could keep us both up. I was rather tired after that.
I bet learning to swim too, that's the other big one. You know, I mean, Bondi Rescue, that television show, it's been on for like 12 years now, and the whole premise is basically this. People from overseas don't learn to swim like we do.
Yeah.
And now
they're
for an hour a week. That's it. Every single week, Robin, it's just the following tourists have gone swimming in their jeans. And that's it. And because they can't handle it.
If we could get the jeans off them, at least
they'd
be all
right. They'd give them a fighting chance.
Why do they think? And Bondi is one of the most brutally dangerous beaches in Australia, and that's where they all go.
Yeah, anyway.
Good way to get rid of people.
Anthony. Anthony, have you had to use some CPR, mate, or some first aid?
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. What happened?
It was quite a few years ago. I just went through my first aid course, and I learnt a lot. And this guy, he had a heroin overdose, he just dropped dead straight in front of me. And I've gone, I didn't even know him from anyone, and no one else was helping him. They're just all standing around saying, "Now, what's wrong with him?" And the guy had gone a really funny colour, and I had to do the CPR like what the other gentleman was saying before, the paramedic, and he was a bloke, so didn't worry me. I just tried to save his life, brought him back around, and got him back to his real colour. And,
Hold on. That moment, so was it after, how long did you have to work on him by the time he gave it, kick back into life?
20 minutes.
Wow.
Whoa.
You can cramp up.
Yeah,
you often have to get other people to help you, don't you?
No, but there was no one else there that was capable of helping me, so that, all I can say is that, I did a good deed that day. You know, the people that do good deeds are the paramedics, the police, and the ambo.
Ain't that the truth?
And especially the surf life savers, geez.
Yeah, that's true as well.
You know, from what I did, it was just to, you know, as I've had a couple of occasions where I've updated my first aid certificate, but, you know, that's all I can offer is first aid. And, you know, you call them the professionals.
Well, you've made a difference. Anthony, you've clearly made a difference.
Yeah. Goodbye, mate.
And you make the point extremely strongly. First aid is a great thing to get, and update your first aid because you never know when you might have to use it. And 20 minutes Anthony worked on someone before he came.
He made it
around.
Really clear he wasn't keen to kiss the guy.
No, I know.
And that's fair enough.
Yeah. You got the same sort of experience, Luke?
Morning, guys. I've done 20 years this year with the Navy, both full-time and reserve, 10 years as a paramedic and nurse.
And what have you done? You must have saved a lot of people.
Probably. I don't think I kept count. But, yeah, a few, I'd say, in my time. I was with the US Navy, actually, for the Boxing Day tsunami up in Bandar Aceh in Indonesia.
Where did you go that day?
Where?
Yeah.
We ended up with the American engineers trying to rebuild the hospital.
Right. Now
and get all the mud out.
Wow.
Get all the mud out. Okay. And so how many people do you think you saw on that day that, you know, were requiring assistance and first aid?
There were thousands.
Thousands. Okay.
So now, even
2 months later, they were finding, because they went up to the hills. So a guy I knew who's in the US Navy, they went back there and he said, I found a guy had his leg amputated with a plastic bag around it, and that was 2 months later, and he'd been living up in the hills.
Jesus.
And that's where they found everyone.
Because they said that all the corrugated iron and stuff that got all the tin that got washed in, it was just slicing people open.
Yeah, it was horrendous. Oh.
So, Luke, when you start that, you know, you're coming in, you're obviously an official, people will be thinking, you can help us, you can help us. What do? Do you just stop every time that someone needs something, or...?
Well, there was a... you're sort of... go into self-preservation as well and just automatic mode. And there were so many people. The first part of it was to clear everything away and set up primary healthcare facilities. So you do the first aid and you do the dental stuff. And then you got the UN that comes in and they try and pair everyone together, you know, who's lost who. But, yeah, it starts off as first aid. And then we were on a big ship, Mercy, a big hospital ship, that can hold about 2,000 people, and we're just ferrying, you know, you had your helicopters just ferrying people to the ship, back and forth, back and forth.
And what about kids? That'd be the tough thing, man.
Yeah, it is. It is. And even to the point where you wouldn't even think about it, I remember, so a lot of these people had never even seen a helicopter. So I had a kid who was conscious, but he had a badly broken leg. And you're trying to explain to these people's parents who can't speak English and still talk, you know, believe in witch doctors, that this big bird in the sky is going to take your kid to this big white hat, this big
ship.
Jeez, Luke. It's quite incredible. Great work, mate. Well done. 20 years. That's an absolutely fantastic innings of going around helping other people. I was just thinking about that hospital ship that holds about 2,000 people. Mm. Maybe you guys should sort of sail that behind that cruise ship that has all the gastro. You might be able to fill it up.
Yeah, well, the US Navy and Australian Navy every year, they do a thing called Pacific Partnership, and they take Mercy and they go to places like New Guinea, Vanuatu, and they do all primary health care every year, and they go around the Pacific and do a whole lot of free treatment.
That's excellent.
Well, thanks for telling us all that.
Yeah, well done, Luke.
Marto, Ed and Rob in the new Triple M.
So a good win over the weekend. The Brisbane Lions women's team, their first home game. There was a few thousands of people. What's it called, Robin?
It's the South Pine Sports Complex.
Just Brendale, mate. Brendale or Burpengary. Right.
What did you call it?
Well, I'd call it Albany Creek.
Yeah, Brendale, I call it. Anyway.
It was 30-something, 5, 35, 36 degrees out there. It was stinking hot. And safe to say that the kicking of the Lions women's team was very good. Is that because of our next guest? Play the fanfare because it's time to welcome former Lions champion and Queensland ambassador and now Lions women's coach of some sort, Dan Merritt.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
How are the girls like the coach, mate? What's the approach?
Mate, very, very interesting. A lot different to the boys, but...
In what way?
Well, I think the girls, obviously... When I talk, I go, righto, man up,
like man up your player or...
Oh, you can't say that.
I know. Or I'll say, come on, guys, let's get going.
You can't say that.
Why can't you say that? Yes, you can say that.
You're a hate monger, Dan Merritt. You are a hate monger.
So I might have to shut this down.
Just getting the lingo right. Mm. I'm just trying to get the lingo right.
Yeah, so. Okay. So you can't say... That's right. I forgot that guys was now illegal to say.
Oh,
I forgot about
rubbish.
That.
Sorry.
That's hard. What are you talking about, Robin? It's your sort
of... Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. I call guys...
It's the Mamma Mia's of the world that push that barrow. So, hey, Dan... Dan, yes, Marta's got a question about your other job.
Oh, no, Lola, I'm happy to talk women's footy. Oh, well, mate, all right. So I turn on the telly yesterday morning and watch the Broncos.
Don't go nice now.
Yeah, don't
be all nice to him now.
I'm paying off air, Marta.
Well, yeah. No, I watched you. I rode my pushy down from Mount Coota one day, and there you were at Purtell Park there up in the Barden Hills trying to sneak away being the Broncos kicking coach, correct?
Yes, that's what I also do.
Did you watch the Broncos yesterday morning live from England? Because I did, and the first kick charged down, and after that Ben Hunt was all twitchy the whole game. Somebody's been telling him, mate, you've got all day to kick, just take your time. Is that you?
Mate, well, his technique was really good. So
not taking any responsibility.
When a kick goes backwards, it ain't a good thing.
No, the boys were just getting the cobwebs out yesterday, so the real stuff hasn't started.
Can
so
I throw a theory to you?
Yes, mate.
Is there any chance, because Wayne Bennett told the coach of Warrington things that he wanted to be tested in?
Mate, I don't know. He's got a lot of pullover in England, doesn't he, Wayne?
Because tactically we got beaten very badly. Well, Robin's looking at me with a quizzical expression.
Why would Wayne Bennett do that?
Why does Wayne Bennett do a lot of things?
Okay, but why
in
your mind?
He's the master coach, Robin.
Okay, so do you think that they lose and then he can say, see, guys, you're not as good as you think
you
are?
You need to lose. You don't want to win all your trials, because then you don't learn anything when you win, do you, Dan?
There's always stuff to learn. Like, we'll learn from the weekend, the girls' team, but I know what you're saying. You never lose, you learn. That's what
it is. Oh, there you go. Hey, Dan, one before
and having the Lions over the last few years.
Trying to avoid that. Trying to avoid that. PhDs all round. Dan Merritt, how impressed have you been with the skills and abilities of the AFL Women's, the Lions Women's team?
Oh, been blown away, mate. When I signed up for the job, I really didn't know a lot about it, and since I've been there, I'm that grateful that I put my hand up for the role, and just the girls' even attitude towards
does it take you back?
Then?
Does it take you back bit to when it was like less money and less corporate in footy in the males game?
Oh, definitely, mate. That's probably one of the main differences, is that you can really tell why the girls play footy, and that's for the fun of it.
Aren't they smiling a lot?
They love it.
Yeah.
They're so grateful to be there. But here's the question: are they better than the boys? and we are talking the Lions here.
Yeah. No, they're not.
Come on.
You don't have to answer that, mate.
They could beat them, potentially.
Oh, God. Did you actually watch it? They're not that good. We can be nice to women's football, but don't start. You can't compare the two at all.
No,
how hard has it been to teach them how to kick? Because some of those girls had never kicked a footy, I believe.
Yeah, we've got a few girls that come across from other sports, but they've picked up the skills really, really quickly. And we've got a couple of beautiful left foot kicks in the team as well. So
lefties.
Lefties always kick the ball better for some reason. I've been very jealous my whole playing career.
Dan, we're going to have to talk about that another day. Marta, that's an incredible...
I'm a lefty.
I know you are. That's incredible. Yeah.
So I just sat here. I was basking and nodding in the sun.
Dan Merritt, former Lions champion. He's an ambassador. He's a kicking coach extraordinaire. Good on you, buddy. We'll speak to you real soon.
No worries. Thanks, guys. And welcome to the team, Robin, from one redhead to another.
Thank you, sir. Rangers unite.
Cheers, mate. I'll tell you what life in the real world's really like. It's splintering us, our TV watching on the weekend. Do you remember when I used to get to work on a Monday and you talk about what you did, on the weekend, how's the family and stuff, and then at the tail end of these sort of conversations, if you're still talking long enough, you talk about TV.
The thing you all watched before.
All watched. Everyone would watch the one show.
Yeah.
I'm finding now, like, I'm back on a building site at the moment, and you start having a chat, everyone's watching a different bloody show, and it's hard. What about, like, they'll say, oh, what about Steve on such and such a show? I go, oh, no, don't watch that one. And then they've got to take 15 minutes to describe who the hell. They just, this is what modern world of television is about.
Tonight, I'm a Celebrity. Oh, at First Sight, rules.
That's the whole of work. You may as well just glug them all together. And that's what I did last night. Thank God the cricket was on instead of the...
Celebrities. Marriage. Married at First Light. I just did it.
That wasn't on because cricket was on. And I was trying to work out Mitch Marsh, where's all these players? And I realised they're over in India or Dubai, The whole thing is an absolute schmozzle. And I don't want to mention any networks, but... I think it might have been, what's the show where they're in the jungle? Oh, no, the one where I don't know you, but I'm going to sleep with you. That's Married at First Sight.
All right.
Yeah. Righto. They offer you somebody. They say, do you want to do interviews? There's only one person I want to speak to is that story that came out. I think her name, I didn't know her name. I said the girl who can snort cocaine off her breast. I want to ask about how that happened.
Okay. Like, she's not talking.
Did some spill? Yeah, doesn't want to talk. Cheryl, she doesn't need a name. But you've got all the other people.
You're absolutely right. And this often happens too. You go, great, can we talk to the one with the big cans and just the cocaine stuff? No, she's not talking. You're like, what do you mean she's not talking? This is the only time in her whole life anyone's even going to be vaguely interested in her.
That's right.
This is her time to talk.
Candyman Mansion.
That's right. Oh, and she's been to Hef's Playboy. Honestly, that's who you want to talk about. Like, you don't want to talk to you see on that MKR, do you watch MKR?
Yeah, I do.
I was watching that for 10 minutes last night. And now they're telling me my Pilates instructor, Matt, who's one of the world's great blokes, he's cheated.
Yeah, I recognize
you. How do you cheat on that show? You've got cooking ability? What's to cheat with?
You'd use a sauce or a paste that's been pre-bought, is my guess, rather than making it from scratch.
A sauce or a paste that's been pre-bought. Mm.
That's what I would suggest is what they've done. It did happen slightly a couple of seasons ago, but...
Did they find a empty jar of chicken tonight in his bag?
Pretty much. That's pretty much what happened a couple of seasons ago, but...
Wait, hold on.
They found, I think it was like some sort of anti... But like it was a paste. It was a paste that they should... Yeah, that they should have used. No, it was a jar. And then Manu or one of the guys went through the rubbish bin.
Yeah. Oh, Pete's like one of those drug corgis. He can sniff.
I smell master foods.
But because they've already done it once, it has to be worse than that. Like they're saying that these guys are going to be, they're going to be given zeros. So.
Oh, no. He's a very successful physiotherapist. I think he'll survive this. All right. Oh, there's your ad, reality TV. Great.
Marto and Robin, the new Triple M.
I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, and they're dropping like flies now. My goodness. It was a bit of one in, one out yesterday as Carson Kresley.
What?
Google that to find out what that is.
What is that?
It's a former... goodness knows. So anyway, he was a racing ambassador for a couple of years. He's dropped in. But it meant that someone had to go, and in a shocking twist, the captain of the camp, the camp leader, the man, the moral compass of the whole thing, was booted out. And he joins us on the line. Jaylen Geyer, what a shocking turn of events.
Oh, listen, you know what? It was a night of the long knives, really. But I'm rather glad to get out because I'm not as fabulous as Carson is, and I'm sure that he'll glam up the camp.
What was it like, Jay?
Oh, look, you know what? You don't actually get a great idea of actually how camp life is because, you know, it is... It has its ups and downs. If you're not self-motivated, you end up looking at the sky a lot of the times and trying to count the baboons as they run across.
Right.
I think the phrase that was said throughout the camp was wishing the day away. I was in for 3 weeks, and the only thing that I lost in there was 13.1 kilos.
Nice. Oh,
wow. That's not bad, is it?
So this is the new Biggest Loser.
I should have actually joined the Biggest Loser, but I just did that whole Jenny Craig on the cheap, really, and went into the jungle for a while.
Who irritated you the most?
All of them, everyone has their turns at irritating, everyone, including myself. I think you look at people like Ash, who doesn't say please or thank you and just barks orders.
To be fair to Ash, though, I mean, she was on a cooking show for 2 minutes and then
she's
was on
probably
Dancing
famous,
with the Stars.
Jay, not
she's
like
an,
you.
Yeah, she's an actual celebrity, Jay.
She's big.
You could learn a lot from the Ash Pollard story, Jay.
When we did our Jungle Radio, I did learn a lot about it and I sort of sat there and just thought,
you better stop swearing because your parents are going to have a chat to you when you get out.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jay, did you feel underappreciated at times? Can I just play one that was on telly last night? Yes. So you just come out. I think, what were you surrounded with? Was it snakes on you when you're doing you'd done the puzzle?
Yeah.
And you said this.
Yeah. Now, Jay, you seem to really struggle with that last piece.
Listen, you know what? It's just like I'm really good with square windows, but the triangle ones just get me all the time.
Is that right?
Good joke.
Are you into chivalry by any chance?
Pull her down.
They didn't get it.
Was a great gag, and no one laughed.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you do try to do that. I mean, I did try, honestly, to get that puzzle. But at the end of the day, look, I can still eat myself. You know, Natalie Batten's weight, there's nothing left. I've got shoes heavier than her.
All right, mate, you're lovely. You're a lovely presence there, and I know you're going to miss Ash, and I know you're going to miss Kira, but I'm sure you guys will catch up when they get out of the jungle.
They're not going to miss the ukulele, though, are they?
No.
Yeah, look, I'll play something for them when they come out. You know, what's in the bag?
What's in the bag?
Coming to a kids' concert near you. See you, Jay. Thanks, buddy.
Yes. See you, guys.
This Marto, Ed and Robin catch-up is brought to you by the unbreakable Toyota Hilux SR5 with satellite navigation and 3.5-tonne towing and trailer sway control. Search Toyota Value.